It's Wednesday, and it's time for our regular Dakota Political Junkie segment. Joining me today are John Hunter, publisher of the Madison Daily Leader. John, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Kara. It's great to be here.
And David Montgomery, political reporter with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. David, happy to have you on the phone.
Always glad to be on.
Thank you for being here. Well, I have the TV on and it's on silent, but I'm seeing the Senate is moving past this marathon 21-hour, what do you call it, filibuster or speech, I guess. And they're starting to have a procedural vote in the U.S. Senate on the continuing or on the spending bill. Senator Thune came out today and said that he is. Hang on, I got to find it. My screen is locking up on me here. What did he say? He said that he won't vote for the continuing resolution, which keeps the government funding if it doesn't defund the Affordable Care Act.
And I guess the Senate, regardless of Thune's vote here, is expected to pass this. A number of Republican legislators who oppose, who are going to vote no on the bill, are nonetheless going to vote against an attempted filibuster an attempt by Senator Ted Cruz, who just finished his 21-hour speech, to block consideration of the bill. So the bill, and then it just needs a simple majority. So the funding bill is going to pass the Senate with the language defunding the Affordable Care Act out of it, and then the real action goes back to the House. Where the Republican majority there that passed the defunding language in the first place has a decision. They can stick to their guns and say that they're going to refuse to fund the government as long as the Affordable Care Act is funded, in which case they either don't do anything or send it back to the Senate. Or they can concede defeat and vote to fund the government without the defunding language that they want. So it's all going to depend on what they decide. If they decide to stick to their guns, and that puts them in a collision course with the Senate, which is controlled by Democrats and President Obama, who are expected to be even more unyielding, they're not going to give up on the Affordable Care Act. And that's the path that leads to a government shutdown, where the two sides can't agree on funding, keeping the government open.
So this could happen as early as next week, though, right?
Yeah. There's some delays built in there, but the government funding runs out at the end of September. So on October 1st, if the Congress hasn't passed a resolution funding the government, and this is just a stopgap. This is not a permanent budget. This is a several-month stopgap to keep the government going until later in the year, with the idea being that then they could maybe pass a more permanent funding. But by the end of this month, they're going to have to pass something or the government will shut down on October 1st.
Seems like we're always here, doesn't it?
Definitely the past couple of years, since the Republicans took over the House in 2010, ushering in the era of divided government, there have been some really fundamental divisions between the two parties about what should be done, and both parties take it to the brink. A lot of brinksmanship, a lot of last-minute maneuvering. A few weeks after the government funding deadline, there was a deadline for the debt ceiling, where the government is going to run out of money to pay its debts and will need more authority to borrow. And Republicans are insisting on concessions. President Obama is refusing to give concessions in return for raising that debt ceiling. And we're only here, and we passed the official deadline on that months ago. We've been operating under gimmicks and things to stretch things out that have let us last this long. So brinksmanship is alive and well in Washington, D.C., and we're going to be seeing a lot of it probably until several elections from now when things finally sort themselves out.
John Hunter, how much of this should American people take? Do we have a say in any of this?
Well, it's a grand game of chicken, and and I think both parties believe that this type of brinksmanship that David is talking about is an effective way of getting what they want. On the other hand, we have been, speaking of animals, we've been hearing kind of the crying wolf for a long time. Remember back even to the Reagan administration when we got to a $300 billion budget deficit that, you know, the sky would fall and so forth. And so I think American people generally have kind of grown skeptical that they were actually on the brink of something disastrous. They don't have a lot of confidence in getting a permanent solution to these, but I think they generally expect that there'll be some last-minute deal that will extend the status quo for a while and that we'll face this again in some period of time, whether it's weeks or months. Sometimes, though, these last-minute deals have clauses in them that are kind of unintended consequences, and certainly the sequester was what's known as sequester, kind of across the board for non-discretionary budget cuts, was considered to be thrown in as a, you know, unlikely thing that would happen, and it became very likely. And then when it was set to take place, no one thought it would, and then it has, and it didn't get to the kind of disastrous levels that people expected. So I think each one of those kinds of things, when Congress said the world is going to blow up if we don't get our way, and then it doesn't, has left the American people kind of numb to the whole process.
Well, an issue that's near and dear to South Dakotans, the Farm Bill, passed the House last week, or this within the last week. How's that? Are we happy with it?
Well, these things go ahead, John.
It'll go to conference committee. That's the place where things, you know, and it's a little bit hidden out of view. You know, the Senate passes its version, the House passes versions, and remember, this is kind of a split bill too, both kind of the nutrition and the farm support kinds of things. So it gets to be the devil's in the details. And yes, they can agree on a fair number of things, but those things that they disagree on, now it'll be a smaller group of people, the conference committee nominees, and certainly it's important to see who gets nominated to that conference committee. But if they can work out anything at that point, it's not clear yet.
The Senate candidates are speaking out. Republican Mike Rounds has some hefty fundraising goals. David Montgomery?
The third fundraising quarter of the year is about to end in a few weeks. At the end of September, candidates will start compiling a report that they'll send to the Federal Election Commission showing how much money they've raised and who gave it to them and what they've spent it on. And so all the candidates are now in a mad rush to try to raise as much money as they can before that deadline. So a lot of people... potential supporters look at fundraising as a sign of the strength of someone's candidacy. Mm-hmm. People don't want to back a loser, so they look to see if a candidate is raising enough money to be competitive before they jump on. So all the candidates want to make as good of a showing as they can in this upcoming report. So all of them are sending out emails and Facebook posts and tweets begging their supporters to give them money to help them reach their goals. Mike Rounds is the only one to set a concrete goal for this quarter. He said that he hopes to raise about $600,000, which is about what he raised last quarter, although it should be noted that Mike Rounds, that last quarter, raised $600,000 after saying he'd hope to raise $500,000. Mm-hmm. So there's probably a little bit of intentional lowballing going in to set the expectations so that he can easily clear that bar.
Mm-hmm.
The other candidates haven't set public goals, but... as an observer, if they can't raise at least $100,000 during the time they're in the race, that's going to be raise some serious question marks about their campaign, especially given the relative financial juggernaut they're facing in Mike Rounds.
Chantel Krebs has announced she's running for Secretary of State. Talk a little bit about that process.
Well, that's, the Secretary of State is nominated at the candidates for that are nominated at the state conventions.
Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans will come up with one candidate and the Democrats will come up with one candidate. The incumbent, of course, Jason Gant, has announced that he will not seek re-election. And then, remember, this also was in 2014, so it's still, you know, a year plus from now. But it'll be next summer when those party conventions take place. And Chantel Krebs is a perfectly qualified candidate. I mean, she has experience as a state legislator and as a business person, and is proved to be trustworthy and so forth. So it's unusual, I think, for an incumbent who won by a fair amount last time to say not going to run again, but there's been some controversy with Jason Gantz's time in office, and so I think Chantel would very quickly become the favorite in that race, regardless of who the Democrats come up with.
Is this kind of a signal saying, I want this, so if you're thinking about it, you know that I want it too? I mean, it seems kind of early to be talking about it.
I think that's sure possible that you know, it's not just I'm thinking about it, I'm serious about it. And I think that would discourage some other candidates possibly. David, do you agree?
I think it's going to be hard to say how this whole thing shakes out. I think Chantel Krebs is going to be a formidable candidate here. She'll probably face some challenge, but the real question, onus is going to be on the Democrats to try to come up with someone, a capable challenger here.
Mm-hmm. Talk a little bit about Governor Dugard and the former DM&E rail line, and what's happening behind the scenes, politically speaking, with this battle to keep Canadian Pacific and keep the line open.
Go ahead.
In December, Canadian Pacific, which bought the DM&E railroad line that runs east-west through South Dakota in 2008, announced that they were going to put up part of that line, including the whole stretch in South Dakota, up for sale. And that set off some alarm bells at the governor's office, they're concerned that a sale could hurt South Dakota farmers and other shippers in the railroad. So they're trying to find out whether Canadian Pacific met the promises it made in 2008 leading up to that merger. So they've asked this federal regulatory board, the Surface Transportation Board, to force Canadian Pacific to reveal that information, and that if it shows that Canadian Pacific hasn't met those promises, to force them to make those upgrades before they sell the line. Canadian Pacific, for its part, says that it's made what it's promised. And further, it says that South Dakota doesn't have anything to worry about, that it's going to sell the line to someone who's going to keep it up and be a competitive shipper for South Dakotans.
So now he has the Secretary of Ag on his side.
Yes,
Vilsack
yes.
came out yesterday.
Just yesterday, yeah. Governor Dennis Dugard got a big ally. He visited Washington, D.C. earlier this month, met with Secretary of Agriculture, the Secretary of Transportation, other officials, talking about this very issue. And at least one of those meetings paid off, as Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack, a Democrat and a former governor of Iowa, sent a letter to the Surface Transportation Board supporting South Dakota's position. Now, the Surface Transportation Board is independent. It doesn't have to follow what the administration is asking, but this is a pretty significant ally. So I think South Dakota's chances of a success here went up a little bit yesterday.
Okay. John Hunter?
I agree. I think getting Vilsack behind that does matter. And I think the governor's concerns about this are legitimate. The sale of this to the wrong people or to someone who is not going to do this could hurt transportation, you know, agricultural transportation in South Dakota. So, you know, for their part, Canadian Pacific has already said, yeah, we spent well more than the $300 million that we said we would, but yet the governor is still skeptical about those figures and so forth. So I think it's a good move to line up Secretary Vilsack on this thing. But how the Surface Transportation Board rules is hard to say.
Right.
just to cut in here before we run out of time,
yeah.
If there's a minute or two, some late-breaking news that you might not have caught, but dealing with South Dakota politics. This morning, the director of the South Dakota Legislature's Legislative Research Council, which is the staff arm of the legislature, resigned minutes before a report was presented that had some criticisms of how the legislature's staff had managed itself, primarily, I guess, reflecting some dissatisfaction among the Republican majority in the legislature with how the staff was functioning. Director Fry, in his statements, said that there's, has alluded to there being some conflicts and some difficult times in recent years, and the legislature is looking to move forward in a direction that might include hiring some partisan staff who would work specifically with the Democrats or the Republicans rather than, as is now, all staff will work with any lawmaker who comes to them. So there's some significant changes going forward. Democrats aren't happy with what's happening. The Democrats voted to reject Fry's resignation, but they're a minority, so his resignation was accepted, and it's going to be interesting how this all plays out.